President Raisi says the West seeks to portray a false image of the Iranian nation's victories and achievements. The Syrian President Bashar al-Assad begins his first official visit to China in almost two decades, a trip Beijing says will push ties to a new level. And Yemen's armed forces have held a military parade to commemorate the anniversary of the 2014 revolution in the Arab country. Thanks for joining us. President Ebrahim Raisi says the West keeps making miscalculations about Iran and seeks to show a false image of the country's achievements. Raisi made the remark upon arrival in Tehran from New York, where he attended the 78th session of the UN General Assembly. The Iranian president said that on his trip he drew the world's attention to how the Iranian nation has managed to thwart enemy plots and overcome a hybrid war in the wake of the 2022 riots. Raisi said the centerpiece of his UN speech and meetings in New York was clarifying Iran's position and securing national interests. Issoumi Shamedi joins us now to tell us more about the Iranian President Ebrahim Raisi's, speech. So tell us more about some of the accomplishments that Ebrahim Raisi talked about there, Gisu.
Well, for
this
trip, what was considered very important from many different aspects. First of all, this time around, when President Ebrahim Raisi attended the UN General Assembly, it was while Iran and now it's a member of the Shanghai Cooperation Organization and BRICS. And the fact that President Ebrahim Raisi mentioned that he held several meetings with 10 heads of state during his trip to New York shows how important this was and the strong foothold that Iran has gained on an international level, and the fact that, of course, Iran is now a key player in international equations of it. So this is something that Ebrahim Raisi did mention, and he emphasized basically on the values of the Islamic Republic, and he said that anyone who wants to be in with the Islamic Republic should understand the values of the Islamic Republic and the Iranian nation as a Muslim nation. He pointed to the desecration of the Holy Quran as well and condemned that once again. Basically, this trip, according to President Ebrahim Raisi, was one with plenty of accomplishments. But something he definitely tried to make very clear was the fact that mainstream media tries to portray a very distorted image of the Islamic Republic of Iran. And he said that it is very important for independent news outlets to be able to portray Iran the way that it is.
Thank you very much for that. Gisu Mishahmedi there talking to us. Thank you, Gisu. Families of the victims of a 2018 terrorist attack in Iran's southern city of Ahwaz have filed a lawsuit against a number of U.S. officials and administration for their role in the crime. The lawsuit has been submitted to a Tehran court. 32 high-ranking U.S. officials, including then-President Donald Trump, are among the defendants. According to the judge overseeing the case, two U.S.-backed separatist armed groups committed the terrorist act, enjoying Washington's logistical support. The families of the martyrs hold Washington accountable for abetting and equipping the terrorists. They also demand damages. 25 people, including a 4-year-old child, were killed and some 60 others injured in the terrorist operation during a military parade in Ahwaz in September 2018. Ali Loimi Bagheri was one of the victims of the 2018 terrorist attack on the city of Ahwaz in Iran's Khuzestan province. He was also one of Iran's disabled veterans of the Iraqi-imposed war in the 1980s. His daughter appeared in the Tehran court and raised her family's grievance with respect to acts of terror and Washington sponsorship. The victim's daughter said her father had already been targeted in a U.S. terrorist attack against Iranian naval fleet in the Persian Gulf in 1987 and taken captive by American forces. She underscored the U.S. troops' quote, inhumane and excruciating torture of her father as an instance of an act of terror. She said the U.S. also sought to kill her father inside of Iran after he was released from captivity. The daughter also touched upon her father's murder in the terrorist attack of September 2018.
The September 2018 terrorist assault in Ahwaz was the fourth of its kind targeting my father, but it was not directly carried out by the U.S. and its agents. My 51-year-old father was assassinated in his hometown by mercenaries hired by the United States. Tragic was the fact that my father had already suffered inhumane and excruciating torture at the hands of U.S. troops, but he was assassinated by hirelings and traitors in front of our own eyes.
She said before her father was assassinated in 2018, he had been confined to a wheelchair and suffered acute medical conditions due to the torture that he had gone through at the hands of U.S. soldiers. The daughter said separatist groups have so far assassinated over 500 Iranian Arabs, like her father, in Khuzestan, with the support of the U.S. government and certain European countries such as Britain. Iran's Paddy's Technology Park has unveiled 12 new products invented by its knowledge-based firms. The high-tech products were unveiled by Iran's vice president on the sidelines of the 21st annual meeting of the Technology Park. Gisumi Shahmadi tells us more.
Supporting young innovators and home to knowledge-based companies developing high-tech industries, Paradis Technology Park is taking major steps in commercializing technological achievements, and the 21st annual meeting of the park this year proudly became the venue for celebrating the accomplishments of a new generation of inventors.
Today, Paradis Technology Park has created a standard environment that allows young minds to flourish. It allows them to pursue their goals. With an area of about 500 hectares, we are home to knowledge-based companies that are saving us hundreds of millions of dollars in imports. Every year on this day, we present a number of new products.
On the sidelines of the event, 12 new products were unveiled, from deep drilling robots and software for simulating drilling operations to granulated food products. High-tech is the name of the game.
The technology that we have developed is quite unique. We have managed to develop the know-how to produce granulated products in pharmaceutical dosage forms. This new technology will allow a predictable and repeatable process, which is essential in the pharmaceutical industry. Up until now, our company has been able to enter the market for food additives. These are actually products that we used to import from other countries, and now I should proudly say that the entire procedure from A to Z is carried out in Iran.
Notable achievements that are even more impressive considering harsh Western sanctions on Iran.
There is something called the willpower of strong people, and today we're witnessing that in Paradis Technology Park. This is what happens when the government decides to support your young innovators. They overcome all obstacles, including sanctions.
Our main activity concerns marketing the products of knowledge-based companies. We mostly focus on the oil and gas sector. However, this year we are also trying to get those products that are competitive into the world market. We have talked to Chamber of Commerce about that.
With efforts made by these young inventors, products labeled Made in Iran will soon be in demand on the global market.
Supporting innovation and new ideas, Paradis Technology Park is looking forward to gaining a foothold in the international market. Gisumi Shahmadi, Tehran.
Another anti-Israeli operation in the occupied West Bank has left the regime soldier injured. Israeli police said a Palestinian driver rammed into the Qalandia checkpoint east of Al-Quds. The Palestinian has been arrested. Tensions are high in the West Bank, with Israeli forces carrying out near-nightly raids on Palestinian towns. Palestinians have also carried out retaliatory operations, which have led to the death and injury of several Israelis over the past few months. The Syrian president is in China on his first visit since the war and foreign-backed insurgency gripped his country some 12 years ago. Beijing says Bashar Assad's trip will take bilateral ties to a new level.
We believe that President Bashar al-Assad's visit will further deepen mutual political trust and cooperation in various fields between the two countries, pushing bilateral ties to a new level.
Assad arrived in the eastern city of Hangzhou, where he will attend the opening ceremony of the Asian Games on Saturday. He and other foreign leaders will then meet Chinese President Xi Jinping there. The Syrian president will also travel to Beijing to discuss bilateral issues and China's help to rebuild his war-ravaged country. The visit comes as China expands its engagement in West Asia. This year, Beijing brokered a deal that saw Saudi Arabia and Syria agree to restore diplomatic ties and reopen their respective embassies. Geopolitical analyst Peter Koenig has told us about the significance of Syrian President Bashar al-Assad's trip to China.
President Bashar al-Assad's visit to China and his meeting with President Xi Jinping will further strengthen the already good relations, diplomatic relations and other relations between the two countries. China has an outstanding record in expanding diplomacy and peace initiatives. What is important, Mr. Assad's visit will likely lead to enhanced support by China for Syria's defense and possibly reconstruction of Western-initiated war-destroyed infrastructure. Since January 2022, Syria is also part of the Chinese Belt and Road Initiative, a fact that may further enhance China-Syria collaboration, for example, in the field of hydrocarbon exploitation and protection from Western theft, especially from the U.S. and Turkey. President Bashar al-Assad's visit to China comes at a crucial time also, just preceding the coming Third Belt and Road Forum for International Cooperation, planned for mid-October 2023 in Beijing. Regarding the BRICS, although Syria is not yet a candidate for joining the BRICS, this diplomatic visit by the Syrian president to China may spark a common interest in expanding the BRICS with Syria's presence during the next year's BRICS summit sponsored by Russia in October 2024. Overall, as China is expanding her engagement in Western Asia and the Middle East, Syria's diplomatic closeness to China is also enhanced due to Syria's centric geographic location, bordering Lebanon, Israel, and the Mediterranean Sea to the west, Turkey to the north, Iraq to the east, and Jordan to the south.
Yemen's armed forces have held a military parade in the capital Sana'a on the occasion of the anniversary of the country's 2014 revolution. Different units and branches of the military took part in the parade. New advanced equipment and weapons in the army's arsenal were unveiled as well. High-ranking military and government officials were present in the parade, including the president of the Supreme Political Council of Yemen, Mahdi al-Mashhad. Every year, the Yemeni armed forces stage a military parade to commemorate the revolution in the capital. In last year's parade, a variety of combat weapons were showcased that included ballistic and cruise missiles, drones, surface-to-air missiles, and naval missiles. In 2014, Yemenis held mass demonstrations across the country against the incompetency of the government. The protests resulted in the ouster of the former President Abdurrahman Mansur Hadi, who then fled to Saudi Arabia. A correspondent in Sana'a, Yusuf Mowry, joined us earlier to tell us more about the military parade marking the 2014 revolution in Yemen.
So this is the largest display of Yemeni armed forces since the victory of the Yemeni revolution in 2015. And of course, this is despite the Saudi and American imposed blockade on Yemen, which began in 2015. So, and for the first time, in this military display, Yemeni fighter jets can be seen flying in the skies of the capital Sana'a. And this was quite the surprise for the Yemeni population, because this is the first time that Yemenis discovered that the Yemeni army still possesses fighter jets, which is a very, very big victory for the Yemeni army. These fighter jets can be used now in the war. And I think one of the messages that the Yemeni armed forces are sending to the Saudi coalition is that we do have the military capability to defend Yemeni land. We do have power to deliver devastating blows to the Saudi. The fighter jets and the ballistic missiles, the range of drones which are being displayed today, it's sending the message that these will be employed in the near future if the blockade continues or if the Saudi coalition doesn't compromise and end the war and lift the blockade and withdraw all foreign military forces from Yemeni land.
Tens of thousands of senior and junior doctors working for the UK's publicly funded National Health Service have once again walked off the job. The walkouts are part of a dispute with the government, primarily over pay, and are expected to affect thousands of appointments and operations. The doctors say that they are determined to carry on. Said Puriza reports from London.
On the picket line again, up to 60,000 of England's junior doctors. What is different this time? They're joined by 20,000 of their senior counterparts for the first time, all asking to be paid what they deserve.
We do this with a heavy heart, but our salaries have been falling in real terms for 14 years. My salary in real terms is 35% lower than it was 14 years ago. Unfortunately, the Prime Minister refuses to talk with doctors about pay, and so have been forced to do this.
Junior doctors are asking for a 35% restoration, while their senior counterparts are asking for an above-inflation pay rise. In July, Prime Minister Rishi Sunak said there would be no more negotiations on pay and that the rise recommended by the so-called independent pay review body was final. Yet this, the doctors say, isn't just about pay. It's about the depressing state of the NHS. Junior doctor Arjun Singh fears for its future.
If you're having people waiting 12 hours in waiting rooms before they're seen by a doctor, if you're having people having heart attacks and strokes in A&E waiting rooms before they're seen, well, that is a system that has collapsed. And the reason that it has collapsed is in large part because we've not funded our workforce properly. We can't retain doctors. You can't have a hospital and an NHS if your doctors are leaving so frequently.
According to the British Medical Journal, 4 in 10 junior doctors in the UK plan to leave the NHS as soon as they can find another job, at home or abroad. But while the trench warfare continues, delayed appointments have reached the 1 million mark, with the NHS's waiting list already at an estimated 7.6 million.
If the government has any hope of these doctors giving up their industrial action anytime soon, then today's double doctor strike should be a sign that that is simply not going to happen.
With both sides digging in their heels, the strikes could continue into another crippling winter. And for patients on the long waiting list, that could potentially mean months of more misery. Said Puriza, London.
And that does it for World News. Bye-bye for now.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
In the limelight.
According to a new survey, only 34% of U.S. voters think Biden would complete second term. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. RT noted just over a third of registered U.S. voters think that President Joe Biden would complete a second term in office if re-elected next year, according to a CBS News poll published recently. The poll is the latest in a series of surveys showing low public confidence in Biden's mental and physical health. According to the poll, 34% believe that Biden would see a second term to its conclusion, while 44% think he would step down before 2029. Some 22% said that they weren't sure. Biden would be 86 by the time a potential second term ended. His presumptive rival, Donald Trump, would be 82. According to the poll, 55% of voters believe that Trump would finish a second term, while 16% said that he would retire early. Some 29% were unsure. Both Biden and Trump have insisted that their advanced age is not a problem. Biden recently told the crowd that his age granted him a little bit of wisdom, while Trump told NBC News recently that he had inherited longevity from his parents, who died at 93 and 88. Trump told NBC News, "I don't think Biden is too old, but I think he's incompetent, and that's a bigger problem." Trump has repeatedly hammered Biden over his apparent cognitive decline, saying, "I watched him yesterday. He couldn't put two sentences together. He can't talk." He also said about Biden, "It's not an age thing, it's a competence thing." With Biden regularly misspeaking and exhibiting visible confusion at events, voters have expressed similar concerns too. Only 26% of those polled by CBS said the president had the mental and cognitive health necessary for his job, while 44% said the same of Trump. Roughly 23% think neither man is up to the task. Recent polls paint a similar picture, with a Wall Street Journal survey in August finding that 73% of voters believe Biden is too old to serve as president, with 60% concluding he lacks the mental capacity for the job. Biden's own voters are just as worried as Republicans, with an NBC News survey in June revealing that 43% of Democrats have moderate to major concerns about Biden's health, up from 21% in 2020. Most polls show Biden and Trump neck and neck with more than a year to go until the 2024 election. The CBS survey showed Trump beating Biden by a single percentage point at 50% to 49%, with 1% undecided. Meanwhile, Press TV reported that former U.S. President Donald Trump has said the United States is going to hell. According to Press TV, Trump said recently that re-electing him in the upcoming presidential election would give the nation a last chance to turn things around. He told the Sirius XM satellite radio station that the United States is in a rapid decline. The leading Republican contender in 2024 presidential election said the U.S. has one last chance, which makes the votes the most important election they've ever had. Trump said, "Our country is going bad. Our country is being destroyed. Under the administration of President Joe Biden, we are a nation in serious decline, and I think I can turn it around very fast." The 77-year-old former president, who faces multiple charges in U.S. court, said, "I have a great attitude. It doesn't affect me at all because I'm fighting for the country. I'm fighting for the people." Trump once again stated that he does not believe Biden will stand for re-election in 2024 due to what he described as the president's apparent poor health. He said of the 80-year-old Democratic president, "I watched him yesterday. He couldn't put two sentences together. He can't talk. It's not an age thing. It's a competent thing." The former president also said the good polling numbers make him confident he is going to win the election no matter what happens because the people know the charges are fake. According to various reports, a survey published by Quinnipiac University recently suggested that 62% of Republican voters want him, Trump, to be their party's nominee in 2024. According to the poll, Trump is currently trailing the incumbent President Joe Biden by just 1%. Trump now faces four criminal indictments in three separate jurisdictions and a number of civil lawsuits as he continues his campaign. The charges stem from his efforts to overturn the 2020 election, his retention of classified documents after his defeat and hush money payments. The Republican Party's frontrunner, however, has told millions of his followers that prosecutors are only playing politics. He faces roughly 78 years in prison if convicted on all counts. But if he is back in power, he could put off serving prison time until after his term concludes. Trump, however, said recently that it is very unlikely that he would pardon himself if he wins another term in 2024 and that he didn't do anything wrong.
Hidden Files. Around 2 a.m. on the morning of Saturday, November 28, 1953, something rather strange happened at a New York City hotel. A scientist got up in the middle of the night, ran across a dark room, avoiding two beds, and dove through a closed window with the shades and curtains down, then died soon after he hit the ground. His name was Frank Olson, and his death would help uncover a series of secret CIA operations involving the lives of thousands. Hello and welcome to Hidden Files. I'm Marzia Hashimi, and today's mind-blowing topic is a CIA mind control project called MKUltra. The story of MKUltra is at times so surreal that one may think it's the plot of a science fiction movie, but unfortunately, it is very much true and affected thousands of people around the world, although no one is sure of the actual numbers because of the secrecy of the program. It was a Central Intelligence Agency, or CIA, top secret program, which used humans as guinea pigs to test a range of drugs that could force confessions or brainwash individuals through various forms of psychological torture. Well, you see, in the 1950s, the CIA initiated this program to experiment with forms of mind control in order to, and I quote, to catch up with the Soviets and Chinese advances in the field. 80 institutions and 185 private researchers had contracts with the CIA to perform this work, and they were located around the world, as were their victims. So Sidney Gottlieb was the CIA's main man handling this project. He was a chemist, and some of his experiments were covertly funded at universities and research centers. Others were conducted in American prisons and in detention centers in Japan, Germany, and the Philippines. Now, according to journalist Stephen Kinzer, Gottlieb wanted to create a way to seize control of people's minds, and he realized that it was a two-part process. Well, first, you had to blast away, imagine that, blast away the existing mind. Second, you had to find a way to insert a new mind into that resulting void. Well, according to Kinzer, the United States didn't get too far on number two, but they did a lot of work on number one. There were a core group of scientists around the world who were part of MKUltra. LSD, sleep deprivation, and electric shock treatments were their favorite tools to use on their victims, but it was not limited to those. They would induce people into a high with putting them into having hallucinations, then giving them a drug to bring them down, and while in between these phases, some of them would give their victims many electric shock treatments, basically having people lose their minds. Take a look at this.
This is where I have my effect, in the mind.
This is lysergic acid diethylamide, better known as acid. The powerful drug was first synthesized in 1938 in Switzerland. With a dose of mere micrograms, the mind becomes confused. Perception is distorted. Personal identity is called into question. The results can be euphoric bliss or deadly panic.
So that was how LSD was introduced to this country.
Operation Midnight Climax is part of a larger top-secret CIA program called MKUltra. The goal: learn how to control and even reprogram people's minds. The CIA believes LSD might hold the key. Over the next 10 years, the agency doses a cross-section of the American public. Everyone from unwitting housewives to soldiers to even criminals like gangster Whitey Bulger is tested.
You know, what the CIA really dreamed of was sort of like a drug you could give to someone, get them to commit all sorts of unspeakable acts, and they wake up the next day and they don't remember what they've done.
They were looking into brainwashing. They were looking into mind control. They were looking into how they could create what they called Manchurian candidates. They were trying to figure out if they could get people to go out and do things that they would ordinarily not do, like assassinations.
The case of MKUltra has to be one of the craziest cases of blowback in CIA history. Because here they took this drug, LSD, and thought that they were going to be able to use it to control people's minds. And the unbelievable irony is that LSD is a drug that does exactly the opposite. It frees your mind and causes people to question authority.
Turn on, tune in, drop out.
The CIA's attempt to control people turned out to be just the opposite. It created the counterculture as we know it of the 60s. It was the CIA that introduced LSD to the United States.
So not only was the goal of this program brainwashing, but also reprogramming to get the victim to do anything the CIA wanted, even assassinations, and without the victim having the slightest memory of what he had done. The United States was concerned during the Korean War, where many American prisoners of war were confessing to the Koreans that they had actually used germ warfare on their country and were apologetic. Over 7,000 POWs petitioned the U.S. to end the war, and 21 of the soldiers even refused to return to the United States after the war. Well, Washington thought all of this was because of brainwashing techniques, which they thought had been used on the soldiers, but that was not the case. However, it did not prevent the U.S. from starting this aggressive and inhumane program to learn how to control humans by brainwashing them. Officially, the MKUltra program ended when information started seeping out after Olson's case was finally looked into. You know, he was the guy I introduced to you at the beginning of the program, the scientist who was set up to look like he committed suicide, but were most likely killed by the same CIA that he had worked for. It seemed that after he was given an LSD dosage that he had a bit of a conscience and couldn't take the torture to others any longer. And Gottlieb and others, even higher up, knew that he needed to be silenced before he exposed what they were doing. Much about this program came to light 20 years after Olson's death, and because of the public exposure, the program was officially ended. However, there are those who say it never really ended, but just took on other forms. Let's get my guests involved in this discussion.
James Martinez is a media ecologist, radio talk show host, and pioneer in radio broadcasting and behavior modification. Born in San Diego, California, he's an accredited member of the Press for American Media Distribution. Martinez has been a consultant for True TV's Conspiracy Theory and has consulted for Emmy Award-winning actor Eon Bailey for a show entitled Imagine This.
Well, thank you so much, James, for being with us. I'd like to start off with this. How would you describe MKUltra to our audience?
MKUltra was brought over from Europe during World War II, where they were perfecting behavior modification using child abuse and satanic cult ritual. Those were the melting pots for what was to be used. Originally, most people think MKUltra had to do with being able to utilize behavioral software to override the conscious mind of an individual that was pre-programmed for instance, assassination. But it wasn't only for assassination. It was used for political purposes as well. And it was done through ritualistic abuse originally. That's how it started. These ritual abuse techniques were used to create deep-seated trauma within the psyche, and then around the trauma, build and program personalities for certain functions to be used. MKUltra, originally, what people know it from is being able to take the free will of an individual, any individual, and get them to commit murder without them knowing it or even remembering it, and carrying it out skillfully and discreetly so that it could be utilized for political purposes, for altering the chessboard pieces on the grand chessboard, so to speak. That's what it was for originally, but it has far more profound effects today.
I mean, that's really mind-boggling what you said. How successful would you say that program was?
Very successful, very successful. In 1990, when I was working with Walter Boert, we had and interviewed hundreds of people that survived ritualistic satanic abuse. Some were in the private sector, some were in the military, and some were utilized in Vietnam for assassination. And Walter Boert originally, what inspired him to write the book was discovery of deep-seated amnesia with a lot of the soldiers that came back from Vietnam. And he was always very sensitive to the whole idea of warfare as a whole. But what he really, really was concerned about was the battle over the mind. And we knew in 1990 that that's where the high ground was, and the end of the road, and we've reached that now. We knew in 1990 that free will, freedom of speech, and cognitive liberty would be the biggest issues on the planet. And this today is where we're at, because we are now in the process of merging our central nervous system to technology. And this is, we're at a very, very dangerous place for the whole human race at this point.
Well, besides the drugs used in the MKUltra program, I saw in an earlier interview that you had done, you talked about child abuse techniques also used. Can you expand on that for me?
When you have individuals in society that get off on having power over others as a mechanism of an effect of satisfaction to the psyche, most of the time it's because they're disassociated from previous childhood that they experienced as a youngster. Whether it was sanctioned by the government or done through a program, these type of individuals come into power, and then what ends up happening is they have no empathy or even feeling for anything outside of themselves because they've been fractured themselves. And everybody has heard the term, you know, those that have been abused, abuse. And this is what we have today. And it was weaponized, MK Ultra, and all the programs associated with it, MK Naomi and all the others, were utilized against the public to capture America and then the world.
Well, you just mentioned about mind control techniques transcending. And you've also said about the role technology plays in all of this, technology and media. Let's talk about this a little bit. What do you mean exactly?
Marshall McLuhan wrote Understanding Media. He spoke before the Bilderbergs and the most powerful people in the world on the effects of technology on human perception. And this is a very important piece of the puzzle in understanding mind control, is being understand the what's known today as media ecology, which is the study of human perception and its marriage to technology. And we knew in the early 90s when they began to outer the inner, that's it's called, of the central nervous system outside of the body via the computer, the media extension of our central nervous system, our handheld computers, that was the beginning of the end. And human perception would be altered forever because of that, all of which was planned by DARPA and the military industrial complex quite some time ago. So if people are trying to understand how this functions, they really need to study the works of Marshall McLuhan and other media theorists in the communications field so they understand how human perception is altered through media environments, such as the television, the book, the computer, any media extension of the human psyche alters it. And they're aware of that. All the intelligence agencies were all told this in the 50s. They figured it all out. And they slowly utilized technology to alter and steer obsolescence and human perception and attention span, because now we're in an attention economy. And that's been offset by the amplification of our central nervous system to put us into an anticipation state all the time of receiving a text, receiving a message, receiving. And this is ADHD is an effect of the post-information environment and the computer, which we spoke about in Operation Mind Control.
I mean, if what you're saying is true in your perspective, what can be done to counter these measures?
It's incredibly damaging. I have kind of stayed away from a lot of the news, as I did a media fast by design to unplug myself from everything. And that's what you need to do to have contrast and being able to survive in a post-information environment where everything now is inverted, information is moving at the speed of light, everything changes every second, human perception is being engineered and designed, and we've got the birth of the cybernetic being now, which is completely, totally different than what was previously there 5-10 years ago. We have different humans now. The days of the organic biological entity that we call a human being, it's gone. It's been re-engineered. Now it's being done genetically. So mind control now is not just taking over the mind, it's taking over the entire biology of an individual and re-engineering it for either extermination or for some policy to support the state. So the most important, not discussed issue of our time right now is the liberation of the human condition and what it is to be human, because a lot of us don't know anymore, because we've been so damaged by the technology that's been inserted into the public. I mean, you've spoken to enough people and watched culture close enough yourself to see that what's been done to our children just by the interfacing of technology and their development years. What, you know, a lot of children grew up with a cell phone in their hand. That's a completely different reality and a different nervous system. Their nervous systems have been retuned for something else. They've been retuned to blend in so that their memories and personality will be on the cloud in the future. So the big discussion is, and should be all over the world, is where are we going, what are we doing, and why are we doing it based upon a few people's idea of what a human being should be.
It's really amazing what you're saying. Do you have any final thoughts?
Freedom of your mind and the liberation of the human condition, this is the high ground of the military-industrial complex and the New World Order. And if you do not, and people do not, address these issues, now you're not going to have free will. You're not going to have freedom. You're not going to have a right to rule and create a future that you want. This is, a lot of people have sacrificed to bring this information to the public a long time ago, and people have really put themselves out there because they know at this moment in our history, this is the crossroads of either the beginning and liberation of the human condition or the complete and total slavery of it. So I would suggest everybody start to examine it and take a real close look at it and start taking action from themselves. Don't expect any elected employee to do anything because they've failed miserably, totally, completely. Specifically, I'm talking about the United States. Take it upon the individual self to take control of their own reality, take full responsibility, and then move ahead. That's what I suggest. That's my leading party message for everybody.
Well, thank you very much, James Martinez, for a very interesting discussion. Well, listening to Mr. Martinez can only make us wonder how controlled all of our minds are right now. We're also connected to our screens. Is this the new form of brainwashing? Well, the original sin of torturing people and destroying thousands of lives was really never addressed. There were some families who were compensated, but the majority were not. And, of course, the victims can never, ever be fully compensated. Now, this brings up the question that although the CIA says its MKUltra program no longer exists, what would stop it from using other inhumane techniques to reach a goal? It used biological warfare in the past and never really had to pay for it. What does that mean for us today? Are they in the business of creating germ warfare? It was said that the MKUltra program was so extensive that it even developed biological weapons in the form of aerosol sprays, and that all types of poisons and drugs were created, combined, and tested on humans. And that was then, in the 1950s and 60s. What about now?
March 16th, 2018. The U.S. government's Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, commonly known as DARPA, announces a bold initiative to develop what they call next-generation non-surgical neurotechnology. It is designed to allow the human brain to directly interface with machines.
We know that DARPA is exploring human-machine interfaces that include direct connections between the brain and outside systems. That's been from the beginning of DARPA's information technology mission, and it continues to this day. DARPA has created some of the most influential technologies of all time, things that we use and take for granted every day, including the project that became the internet. They've created self-driving cars, stealth technology, GPS that fits in your pocket. That's DARPA's specialty, to imagine the future and create it.
A new technology that is actually very much on the verge of being a reality that is being fielded is we could have a sensor maybe on the surface of our head or maybe implanted somewhere in our body, in our brain or something that allows us to interact directly with our communications gear, our processing gear, our weapon systems, and so on. But now imagine we take that technology and we can control robots at a distance with it. Even fly drones, you put this sensor on and you think the right way and you can increase the speed of the fan by thinking and controlling that thought with direct-to-mind or mind-machine interfacing. With that type of capability, you could control all sorts of buttons and mechanisms in equipment.
Mind-machine interfaces will have many applications in both civilian and military life. But there are those who believe that this same technology could also be used by DARPA as a new form of mind control. Like their counterparts at the CIA, DARPA-funded researchers have spent decades investigating how the human mind can be altered. In 1965, DARPA launched Project Pandora, which studied the possibility of using microwave radiation to control human behavior. The project reportedly ended in 1969, but DARPA's investigation of how machines can affect and possibly control the brain continues to this day.
750,000 dollars. That's how much the Olson family was compensated for the assassination of Frank Olson by the CIA back in 1975, which is ironic because it seems the only murder that was compensated and apologized for in this manner was the murder of a scientist who himself was guilty of creating bioweapons responsible for the murder of many others. Well, in Canada alone, of the 300 victims who filed for compensation, 250 were turned down with the excuse of not having been affected badly enough or for filing too late or for the lack of medical records, which the CIA had conveniently destroyed. But these victims are only a fraction of those who were severely injured and killed by the similar scientific experiments on human beings without their knowledge and consent. Because in addition to these human guinea pigs and the some 7,000 U.S. soldiers used for these experiments, there were thousands more who paid the price for the projects approved by the American government. People in Korea and elsewhere who received the final product which resulted from these experiments. The most voiceless victims of the CIA's biological warfare were these non-Americans whose suffering didn't seem to be an area of concern as they were citizens of the so-called enemy countries. You see, the most dangerous brainwashing method is not that which was done using LSD and other drugs and terror techniques, but the media propaganda that dictates to people every single day which lives should matter and which ones are simply all the expendables. Perhaps it's time for us to unplug ourselves from all the noise from the screens and give our minds time to process what is reality and what is a creation of cyberspace. Be able to discern the real from the created is the test of the day. And depending on how well we score, it can help determine if we can free our minds or simply behave like a puppet on a string giving in to the whims and directions of others on the web. Well, with that, it brings us to the end of this week's show. And we hope you will be joining us for our next Hidden Files. I'm Marzia Hashmi, signing out for myself and all the crew right here in Tehran. Goodbye for now.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa.
and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and Intelsat 39 and via the Internet. Our Internet address is parstoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
President Raisi says the West seeks to portray a false image of the Iranian nation's victories and achievements. The Syrian President Bashar al-Assad begins his first official visit to China in almost two decades, a trip Beijing says will push ties to a new level.